There we go. That's a little bright. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our listening session here in Modesto, California. I've asked Doug LaMoffa to lead us in a prayer. So would everybody rise?
Good morning. Please bow with me. Dear Lord, we are so grateful and thankful as a people, as a nation, for the opportunity to gather here on a day like this as a free people to express ourselves, to help mold and shape the direction of our government, which, as we know, is formed by you, is appointed by you. Help us this day to have constructive and positive conversations that are informative for our constituents as well as for us as the leaders you appoint to take back to D.C. and make the best possible beneficial decisions in the process for our people. We give thanks for all of our people. We give thanks for our great nation. We also want to give thanks for those folks in law enforcement that protect us on the front lines, on our cities and our counties, and those overseas that help keep the flag flying high in the United States around the world. We ask these things and we give praise in Jesus' name. Amen.
I would ask Hunter Andrade from the FFA to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Hunter?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everybody. So we've got several of our FFA folks here. We've got Luke O'Leary, who's the state president. Luke, stand up. There we go. We've also got Jasmine Flores, secretary. Genevieve Rigelli, who is the treasurer. We have Armando Navarez, who's a reporter. Hunter Andrade, who's the sentinel. And is Bobby Marshy here? Bobby, I don't have a job description for you. You're just an interested bystander. Thank you for being here, buddy. Future of agriculture. We're proud to have the FFA kids with us this morning, and it's always great seeing them in D.C. with those, especially in May and early June when it's hot and humid, and they've got those corduroy jackets on, and you never see them take them off, so it's good stuff. I would also like to recognize Karen Ross. Where's Ms. Ross? Karen Ross is here, Secretary of Ag for California. So I've asked each member to introduce themselves. I will start with our host member, Mr. Lamoff. Mr. Denham.
Well, good morning and welcome to Modesto. We talk a lot on the Ag Committee about the different challenges across the entire country, the different things that we're facing here in California, and certainly in California's Central Valley. There's no better way to really understand our community and our industry than coming here. So I want to welcome the chairman as well as members from the Ag Committee and my friend David Valadeo from Ag Appropriations. They all come together to get a better understanding of the different issues that we have, and I just want to welcome you here. Real quickly, not only are you in the middle of California's Central Valley where we grow just about everything, but you're at MJC, and Modesto Junior College is what I'd say is like no other. We have a main campus downtown, but right here in the Ag Pavilion, we've got all kinds of events we do here. We compete nationally against many of the universities around the country on a lot of the different Ag programs. It's something that we really are proud of here. So welcome to Modesto and the 10th District of California.
Thanks, Jeff. My name is Doug LaMalfa. I'm a congressman from the 1st District of California. It was the very top end of the state. We touch Oregon and Nevada in that corner there with an 11-county district. Heavy on resources, ag, et cetera. I'm a member of the House Ag Committee, as well as the House Natural Resources Committee and the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Basically, I just follow Jeff around to his committees, and it works out very well. He's one of my best friends in Congress and all through this. So in my real life, I'm a rice farmer, just west of Oroville. You all may have heard of Oroville. So I'm on the committees I'm on for the basic reasons, to help agriculture, to build more water supply and have wise use of our water supply, which includes us, and to have the infrastructure that gets our raw materials and finished products where they need to be through our highway system, et cetera. And so we're focused very, very deeply on making those issues work. With this new administration, we're making some headway. And so I'm glad to be here in Modesto. We're always proud to see the FFA folks here. Some of them know my daughter. And it's a real pleasure. Now, what I'd hoped last night, I brought my Mustang down here, and Modesto is supposed to be famous for the cruise night, according to American Graffiti, but I didn't find the cruise. So maybe you guys can point that out to me a little later. So real pleasure to be here. Thank you all.
Good morning, David Valadeo. I sit on the House Ag Appropriations Committee. Well, the House Appropriations, one of my subcommittees is Ag. I'm also on the Military Construction and the Transportation, Housing, and Urban Development subcommittees. I represent California's 21st Congressional District, which is just south of here, basically from Fresno County all the way down to Kern County, so the Grapevine. I obviously represent a lot of agriculture as well. Very proud of my agriculture background. I'm a dairy farmer in my real life. So this is something that's very personal to me and something I'm thrilled to be a part of. And I thank the chairman and Jeff for inviting me to be a part of this, and really looking forward to hearing everybody's input.
Thank you very much. My name is Dwight Evans. You could say I'm from the east of here. I'm from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I'm in the 2nd Congressional District. I'm on the House Ag Committee. I'm on the Small Business Committee. And in my district, I have a school called Saul Agricultural School, which has the largest future farmer of America in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I have been very active on the issue of ag. I've always stressed the part about consumers and farmers have a direct connection in this, and everybody likes food. So again, I appreciate this opportunity and chairman's leadership.
Well, thanks, Jim. I'm glad you joined us this morning, and we're here to listen. We've got a couple of other folks I'd like to introduce. We have Steve DeBron, who's the mayor of Manteca. Steve, are you here? There he is. Steve, thank you for joining us. We also have Gary Sysheth.
Is that close?
Yeah. Gary Sysheth, who's the mayor of Turlock. Gary, where are you? Gary, thank you, Gary. Appreciate you being here along with Karen Ross. Again, I want to thank the school for hosting this morning. They have been terrific. Just incredibly well, easy to work with. Got everything done that we asked for and beyond. The security guys have been off scale good and anticipating everything we want. So I'd like to thank Don Borges, who's the dean of Department of Agriculture and Environmental Sciences. So Don, thank you very much for that. I also want to thank our moderator today here in a second, Paul Winger, who's the president of the California Farm Bureau and also a recent witness in D.C. We put him through that crucible here recently as well. So, but I want to thank everyone who came this morning. I'm not sure who drove or came the furthest, but we certainly appreciate it. We're going to listen. This will be a pretty odd experience for the five of us to sit here and not say anything for the next couple hours while we listen to you. If one of us has a question about something you say to us, we'll certainly try to clarify it, but we're just going to listen. It's your show. It's your event, and we want to hear from you, and you got 2 minutes to squeeze it all in there. One thing that would be helpful, just know, all of us know you thank us for being here. So don't waste any of your 2 minutes thanking us for being here. Just get right to the heart of what you want to say. You don't need the pleasantries and all that kind of good stuff because 2 minutes ago got pretty fast. We're going to try to hear from as many people as we can. Paul will walk through the details of that here in a second, but we want to get to that very quickly. All of this folds into the Farm Bill process that they were coming to toward the end of. I hope to have the Farm Bill with the three gentlemen here that are with me on the Ag Committee to on the floor sometime late in the fourth quarter of 2017, the first quarter of 2018. We're driven to get this thing done on time for the first time in 16 years. Your testimony this morning, your comments, as well as your written comments, those of you that don't have a chance to talk to us and get it into the transcribed record, just know there's a website there. You can submit any written information you want to, and it will be considered just like the oral testimony will be this morning. So if you've got something that's longer than 2 minutes that you want to talk to us about, Vaughn, be sure and submit that for the written record as well. But getting this farm bill done is important. The stability associated with getting it on time, avoiding the drama of the expirations and short-term extensions and permanent law threats, all of that drama, let's avoid that this time and get it done. And your input this morning is going to be really important. We've done one of these in Florida, Texas, Minnesota day before yesterday, California today, and we'll have one in Illinois at the end of the month. So a broad spectrum of ag production, none more varied, none more broad than the Central Valley, California. I don't know there's anything you guys don't grow out here, but maybe weeds. I'm not sure you grow any weeds, but not the smoking weed, the other. That's a bad phrase. I'm sorry. Sorry about that. I was thinking of stuff you don't want to grow in your fields. Anyway, better shut up. So we've asked Paul Winger to be the moderator. Paul, you want to walk through the mechanics of how we get people up and down? And so thank you very much for being here. There'll be some closing comments later, but from this point forward, we hope to just listen to you. So thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Conaway. And thank you for letting me be a moderator. It's nice, a mile from home, so in my alma mater, although this wasn't quite the way it was when I was going to Modesto Junior College, but I date myself. But having something like this for this area is great. It's great to be able to have the group here for the listening session and having the chairman here and the other members of the Ag Committee. As I told the chairman, we were talking yesterday, I don't know that there's any other town in the United States that's had two secretaries of agriculture come from their town like we have here with Ann Veneman and Richard Ling, and we've had five state ag secretaries come from this town. So agriculture is really key, not only the Valley, but here in Stanislaus County and Modesto. So thank you for being here and bringing the group here, Chairman Conaway. We really appreciate it. So the rules of the road is, as long as my battery holds up, I'll have it on a timer for 2 minutes, and at about a minute and a half, we're going to pretend this is yellow. There's no kids in our household anymore, so I ran over to Walmart, and that's as yellow as I could find. I apologize. And then when we get to 2 minutes, I'm going to hold up this other very flamboyant-looking color, and that'll let you know to end your comments. Now, I will say, just try to hit the high points. At the end, we will have up on the screen where you can send your written comments. It'll be houseaglistens@mail.house.gov, but that'll be up there at the end. And so certainly the committee would like to have all of your written comments as well. So please keep your comments concise and short. I'm going to call two names. The first one, I'd like to come up to the east microphone, and then the other one will come over here. And so as we're transitioning, I'll call the next person, and we'll just kind of go back and forth. So I'm going to call two names. The first one's going to be Tony Toso, and so Tony, we'll have you head over to this one on the east side. And then the second one is going to be Bill Mattos. We'll come over here, and I think you might have to make sure that your microphones are on there. So again, you'll have 2 minutes, and we'll try to get through as many as we can, and I think we're scheduled for about 2 hours. So we'll see how many we can get through. So Tony, we're going to start with you, California Farm Bureau, second vice president.
Yes, there we go. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for being here to take our comments today. Just to put a little bit of brief context behind my comments, I'm going to try to keep this general because you're going to hear a lot of different stories this morning from different agricultural people that are going to be able to convey a pretty good message. So in a state that produces $47 billion worth of product, we've run from 47 to 56 billion. It's pretty imperative that California plays a major role in getting these comments out today. And, excuse me, research and development, specialty crops, and being able to tackle labor issues, immigration issues, and different options for crop insurance, those types of issues are going to be very important and plays a major role in what we do here in California. We greatly appreciate your attention to these specialty crop programs, being able to fund new research and development, almonds, and the different different commodities that we do produce here in California. Equipment funding or EQIP funding is going to be very critical for us. Complying with regulation, air quality, those types of programs too. Continuation of livestock and disaster programs. We've just gone through the Detweiler fire, the LIP program, the ELAP program are going to be really critical components to helping us stave off disaster programs that help us to manage and mitigate these damages that have occurred. We recently lost 660 acres in those fires, and the ability to help our communities and our agricultural community fight through those problems is going to be very critical. We will be submitting some more extensive comments, and we appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tony. 2 minutes does go fast, I'll tell you. So next we're going to have Bill Mattis, and then Vaughn Collegian can step up over there. And for anybody that didn't get caught coming in the door, if you want a speaker card, look for the staff back there and fill out one of these speaker cards, and we'll get you in the lineup. So I just wanted to make sure that you knew for the speaker cards, they're back there in the back, and get one filled out and give it to staff. Thank you. Bill.
Good morning, Chairman Conway, members of the Congress. I'm Bill Mattis, president of the California Poultry Federation. On behalf of our federation and all those who rely upon the industry and the state for their livelihood, we are here today to support animal disease prevention in the Farm Bill. After the devastating outbreak of high-path AI that started here in California and swept across the country, we must do all we can to avoid it in the future. That is why we are supporting the mantra of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure by advocating for a new program that focuses on animal pest and disease prevention. We look forward to working with you, Chairman Conway, and Ranking Member Peterson to authorize and fund this forward-looking approach to the House bill. Since 2015 outbreak, the turkey industry has made significant strides, and similar case of high-path in Indiana this year indicates our improvements. But we still lost critical export markets. As the committee embarks on the reauthorization of the Farm Bill, the California Poultry Federation joins the National Turkey Federation and over 70 associations that are asking for inclusion of a mandatory program in the Farm Bill. I'm not going to go into the key provisions because I've sent it into your website, and I'm going to do that. There's one other issue that's very important to us, and we think it's about done, but I want to point out GPSA was a disastrous for the poultry industry. We understand that the Office of Management and Budget has temporarily suspended work on the Farmer Fair Practices Rule, the two proposed rules, and one interim final rule, also known as GPSA rules. As California Poultry Federation, as well as National Chicken Council and National Turkey Federation stated in multiple sets of public comments filed by GPSA rules earlier this year, these rules would have disastrous effects on our poultry industry, and our contract growers here in California oppose them. So we are pleased to see the department pause and review these costly, burdensome regulations, and we hope they will be permanently rescinded once and for all before the October 22nd deadline. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill. I got to tell you, usually it's me getting flagged with these little colors. I it's great to be on the other side of it. Hey, stop, stop, that's it. So anyways, great. If we could have Vaughn will be up next, and coming up, Stephen Summers. Vaughn.
Thank you. Sorry. Good morning. My name is Vaughn Collegian. I'm a farmer of grapes for raisins and almonds in Fresno County. I've met with numerous of you in the past. Thank you. I also work for Sun-Made Growers in Kingsburg, and I want to talk to you about a nutrition topic today. Sun-Made Growers of California is a 105-year-old cooperative owned by 700 raisin farmer members, and we request that you support the amendment H.R. 3402 to the Richard B. Russell National Food Lunch Act, which will specifically allow canned, frozen, dried, and pureed foods and vegetables to be included in the Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Program. Further, we believe that all other federal feeding programs, including the school breakfast and lunch programs, align with the United States Department of Agriculture's 2015 Dietary Guidelines for Americans, which appropriately recommends that Americans eat all forms of fruits and vegetables, including canned, dried, and frozen. For background, the USDA's snack program is administered in eligible elementary schools in all 50 states. I've left a written copy, so I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. Historically, have there been legislative efforts to restrict the fruit and vegetable program to a fresh-only program? Such efforts have denied school food service nutritionists and service managers the opportunity to make their own decision as to the most appropriate snack to offer elementary school children. It's simply wrong that some members of Congress attempt to legislate the type of fruit and vegetable snacks to offer children when there's proof school food service professionals prefer the opportunity to vary the snacking menu to include all forms of fruits and vegetables. The Guidelines for Americans emphasize the importance of across-the-board increase in fruit and vegetable intake, and the recommendations specifically include fresh, frozen, canned, and dried products. School nutritionists are key influencers in determining which healthy products children will consume under the various federal programs. It should be noted that many schools lack either the infrastructure to store or the ability to prepare many fresh products, which can result in excessive waste and a nutritional and monetary loss. I'm out of time. I thank you for the opportunity to speak before you. As you know, the House position is all forms. The Senate position is fresh only. I assume this will be determined in conference. Congressman Valadao, I know you're a co-sponsor of the amendment. Thank you. The rest of you, I hope you sign on board, and I will thank you for being here today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Vaughn. Steve Summers will be next, and stepping up will be Larry Salinas.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Stephen Summers. I live in Oakland, California. I'm here on behalf of the Alameda County Community Food Bank, and I'm here to talk about the SNAP portion of the Farm Bill. I'm here to encourage you to expand this program and not to cut it. I know from personal experience that SNAP is vital to it's the most important federal program in fighting hunger. I know this from my own personal experience when I became homeless during the Great Recession in 2008. SNAP benefits as a homeless person helped me to make healthy choices in eating because they serve a lot of junk in the shelter. After I got out of the shelter and I found a job, eventually that company closed. I was unemployed and back on SNAP for a year. Having SNAP during that time helped me, it enabled me not to make the choice between food and paying rent. An extremely vital program for me at the time. I was able to secure work, but now in this recovery, I'm underemployed. I only work 20 hours a week, and even with that job, I still qualify for a certain amount of SNAP benefits, which you know, help me to put food on the table. So it's a very important program. And even with the SNAP benefits that I get and my salary from my job, it's not exactly like I'm living the high life. I look forward to having a conversation sometime in the future to dispel a lot of myths about SNAP, who gets it, how you get it, and just what it does, and things about fraud. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Stephen. Appreciate that. Coming up after Larry Salinas will be Anthony Scherr. Larry Salinas.
Good morning, Chairman Conway and members of the committee. I'm Larry Salinas, the Executive Director of Governmental Relations at California State University Fresno in the Office of the President. And I'm here to talk, take a different twist to talk about innovation and entrepreneurship in the field of agriculture. California State University Fresno, or commonly known as Fresno State, is a 106-year-old institution. We have a living laboratory, 1,000-acre farm on our campus, about 100 miles south of here. And
Larry, can you move a little closer
sure.
to the mic? They're having trouble
sure.
here.
And we're encouraging the committee to look at language in the new farm bill that includes financial support for the development of new and innovative technologies that will keep U.S. agriculture competitive and economically viable for the foreseeable future. These technologies should include, but not limited to, robotics that ensure plant health, the harvesting of crops, the monitoring and management technologies necessary to optimize water and energy resources, and quality assurance technologies that provide safety in the food chain. Most universities today support incubators and accelerators that provide proven pathways from concept to commercialization for new ideas conceived by faculty and students. And many of these campus-based programs are focused on food, energy, and the water nexus. Since its opening in 2007, California State University's WET Lab, which is Water, Energy, and Technology, has provided and launched a platform for water and energy and ag technology startups. And in fact, next month, we're going to launch the first in the Valley, Valley Ventures Accelerator, which will be a flagship of our growing innovative ecosystem. And this will be the first accelerator in the San Joaquin Valley. We've identified 10 startups. We'll be providing support from an academic and research perspective, and we encourage the committee to take a deeper look into this. It's critical that programs such as these receive a broad range of support from stakeholders such as you, who have a vested interest in keeping U.S. agriculture as the leading supplier of food to our state, our nation, and our world. And in fact, recently, I believe, the California Farm Bureau was advocating in Washington, which included this topic on innovation and entrepreneurship. So I thank you very much for your time and interest.
Well, you had that down. Perfect timing. So next we'll have Anthony Shore, and coming up after that, Frank Coelho. Anthony.
Hi, I'm Tony Shore. I'm president of the California Aquaculture Association, and I'm here on behalf of our association and the National Aquaculture Association to encourage you, respectfully request, that aquaculture be included in the Farm Bill as a specialty crop. This designation would provide aquatic farmers with access to a number of critical USDA programs that would help thousands of aquaculture producers survive when disaster strikes and would improve their marketing and research capacity. California aquaculture, I represent over 100 farmers and 1,000 jobs that produce a wide variety of species, shellfish and fish, various species of fish, including sturgeon. You might be surprised that California is one of the global centers of caviar and sturgeon meat production, which was developed at the University of California at Davis. Was absolutely crucial to its development. Some people may think that aquaculture is a strange specialty crop, but we probably rank in the top 10 of California smaller crops, and we produce about $150 to $200 million worth of product, depending on how you count the values and at what level. So we're a substantial industry. We would like to be a much bigger industry if we had access to the Pacific Ocean. We would also encourage the committee to support a new aquaculture, National Aquaculture Act, which is in development to replace the one that was passed in 1980, which is sadly out of date. As a matter of fact, in California and in federal waters, there is almost no practical means of a farmer getting a permit to farm fish in our very largest aquatic resource, the Pacific Ocean. So I hope that you will follow that and look at passage of that bill. How much I got?
You're done.
I'm done.
Yep. Went fast.
Thank you.
But again, I know 2 minutes goes really, really fast, but and we'll put it at the end, your written comments, and the committee would really like to have those, because then they can have that for the record as well. As well as these comments will go on the record. So we'll have Frank Coelho, and after that, Gene Brandy. Frank.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Frank Coelho. I am a third-generation dairy farmer in the state of California. I've been organic for 20 years, and my question today is, what are you going to do about integrity of the organic dairy industry? Enforcement of the pasture rule is set by the ONSB and has been implemented nationwide, and the integrity of organic farming has been damaged, hurting organic dairy farmers. Organic state laws are not in line with the NOSB and are allowing large corporate organic dairy farms in other states to exist without following federal pastoral rules and to jeopardize the federal rule. I understand that state taxes accrued by organic dairies is large, which may be the enforcement, why the enforcement is not non-existent. but states too must be held accountable, and the large organic dairies must comply with federal rule. All organic dairies must be held equally to the same standard and rules, irregardless of certifiers, state or private. And those certifiers and inspectors must be held accountable to enforce the rules. I support the OFRF as long as their research foundation works to support the implementation of federal pasture rules set forth by the NOSB. Thank you for your time. May I add, I praise the FFA and encourage the committee to keep the family farm alive. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Okay, so we'll have Gene Brandy, and following that, Shanti Prasad. Gene?
Good morning. Hi, I'm Gene Brandy. I'm a beekeeper from down the road in Los Banos, and I'm also the president of the American Beekeeping Federation. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to listen to our concerns for the beekeeping industry in the USA. Our honeybees are not as healthy as they used to be. For us old timers that started keeping bees back in the 70s, we remember the good old days, and we just don't have that anymore. Our winter and annual losses are remaining at very high levels at this time. And there's been some recent survey results from USDA NAS indicate the nation's honeybee colony numbers are increasing slightly, but this is due to the hard work and dedication of the nation's beekeepers. Varroa mites, exposure to certain pesticides, inadequate nutrition, and certain diseases continue to take their toll on the nation's honeybees. We believe it is important that USDA and all federal agencies embrace the framework of the National Strategy to Promote the Health of Honeybees and Other Pollinators. And we also believe that honeybees need to be specifically mentioned in the Farm Bill as allowed on all USDA conservation program lands. The U.S. Forest Service, BLM, and other federal agencies allow apiaries on some of their lands, and we believe that honeybees need access to clean, uncontaminated forage, and there are opportunities on federal lands that are currently not being utilized, and we'd certainly like to see that explored and expanded. The ABF also believes that there should be an increase in the cap on CRP acres, and that the cap be raised to at least 40 million acres, and this would greatly benefit honeybees and other pollinators. Seed mixtures need to be reformulated in many cases to improve the value to pollinators while significantly reducing the costs. ELAP, NAP, and federal crop insurance are helpful programs that provide a safety net for beekeepers and should be continued. And also, there's a new ARS facility, research facility at UC Davis that's ready to go, but it's not yet staffed. So we'd love to see that staffed so that those folks can get to work on behalf of the bee industry. Thank you.
Thanks, Gene. I would just say, too, I'm not sure how the committee can hear up here. I know from mine and maybe back there. Speak really close into the microphone, because I think I have some of the committee members said they're having a hard time hearing. You might be able to hear better out there, but I think the committee might, and it could be I ran too many tractors without hearing it protection. But we'll have Shanti Prasad and then John Bedell. Shanti.
Good morning, Chairman Conaway and members of the House Ag Committee. I'm Shanti Prasad, the Senior Policy Advocate at Alameda County Community Food Bank in Oakland and a Fresno, California native. At Alameda County Community Food Bank, we serve over 300,000 of the 1.5 million Alameda County residents annually. I would like to first echo Stephen Summers' comments about the SNAP program. In Alameda County, we serve, SNAP serves 112,000 people. 59% of those are children. It's a vital program, and I urge you to protect SNAP from any proposals to cut it or to alter its structure. It's designed to help people when they need it most, and as the economy improves, fewer people are on the program. Currently, though, food banks across the country are distributing more food than ever, we still only provide one emergency meal for every 19 meals that are provided by federal nutrition programs, mainly SNAP. So food banks would not be able to pick up the slack if there were a monetary cap, and more people would be left food insecure, causing poor health and poorer educational outcomes and an increase in health costs. I also want to talk about another piece of the SNAP program for able-bodied adults without dependents. ABODs, as they're called, are restricted to 3 months of SNAP benefits within a 3-year period unless that person satisfies the ABOD work requirements or meets an exemption. The ABOD population is a diverse group across gender, across age, and also across urban, suburban, and rural residences. Most are extremely poor at 29% of the federal poverty level. They are veterans. They are young adults who are just out of foster care trying to make it. In California, there are about 470,000 people who are on SNAP as part of the ABODs. Research shows that ABODs want to work. This time limit of 3 months and 3 years is unrealistic. The limit also doesn't recognize other barriers to employment, like chronic underemployment of under 20 hours a week despite looking for work, transportation, and lack of skills. States are allowed to apply for a waiver if they meet certain guidelines, and I urge you to keep this waiver. It's important to keep folks facing unemployment from being hungry and actually helps them to keep looking for work. Cutting SNAP for ABODs would mean turning our back on a struggling population that needs more assistance, not less.
Probably need to wrap up.
I also want to share that SNAP, or food stamps as they were called in the 70s when my mom used them in Fresno, California, helped me to grow up without knowing what it is to be hungry, or worse, malnourished. I had consistent access to fresh, nutritious food, and this is because the SNAP program accomplished what it was there to do. I grew up healthy and was able to get an education and contribute to society. No one in this country should go hungry, and SNAP worked then, and it works now as the most efficient and effective anti-hunger program in America. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Shanti. Next, we'll have John Bedell, and after that, Steve DeBrun. John.
Good morning. My name is John Bedell. I'm Senior Director of Ag Operations at JS West Milling Company and past President of the Pacific Egg and Poultry Association. JS West was founded in 1908 by a native Nebraskan who moved to California to enjoy the slightly warmer weather and drier climate. Don't let anybody tell you it's hot in the Central Valley. It's a dry heat. So as everybody knows that, we are made up of 300 employees. We operate in 22 counties in Northern California, and we produce shell eggs, liquid eggs, almonds, propane for agricultural, commercial, and residential operations. JS West is also active with the Association of California Egg Farmers, who is very interested in the language in the next farm bill as it pertains to something that's currently out there, H.R. 2887, the No Regulation Without Representation Act of 2017, which would impact not just California, but many other states in the nation. And doing some research, I found that 150 state statutes would be in effect in 46 different states, from Alaska to Florida, Maine to Hawaii, and the Dakotas to Texas. California has always had an excellence of being one of the best egg-producing states with the safest eggs. Because of legislation passed by Californians, AB 1447, which states that all chickens in the state of California have to be vaccinated with Salmonella enteritis vaccine. And as we know, in the last 17 years, there has not been one incidence of egg-related human Salmonella enteritis. The California egg farmers have invested hundreds of millions of dollars to ensure that Californians have safe food. JS West alone has invested tens of millions of dollars in providing safe, affordable, wholesome food for California families and businesses, and language like that in H.R. 2887 would undermine the food safety, protecting 39 million Californians. On behalf of the Association of California Egg Farmers, JS West Milling Company, and myself, I would like the committee to concern language about 2287 in the next farm bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Maybe I butchered Steve's last name. I thought it was DeBrun, Mayor Manteca, DFA. Oh, there we go. Okay. And then after that, if we could have Mark Lipson come up, the next mic, be ready to go. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Today, I represent Dairy Farmers of America. My first point, improving the margin protection program, restoring MPP to original proposal is vital for dairy farmers to have a viable and dependable safety net, which dairymen currently do not have. Without correcting key elements of the program, such premiums and coverage, dairymen as a whole will not be able to sign up for the program in future years because it does not work. MPP needs to be a program that will work when margins are significantly low. MPP is not a program to guarantee a profit, but to help save the equity in dairymen's farms. Dairy farmers need to have as many as risk management tools available to them as does any other commodity. There is no reason dairy should be precluded from assessing both the Farm Bill Safety Net programs and other government risk programs at the same time. We are currently having labor challenges. Dairy farmers support efforts to reform our immigration system to make sure our country has more secure and more effective for businesses in need of workers. Without access to our current worker visa program, despite specific requests from MP, National Milk Producers Federation, the Department of Labor has turned down accesses to H-2VA visa programs and the difficulty to define higher wages and benefits dairy needs. Comprehensive immigration reform that takes account into the needs to protect current programs and create access to future programs to the needs of our dairy farmers. The importance of trade. NAFTA is critical to the access and success of the dairy industry. We must protect from what we have in Mexico and challenges and candidates to efforts to distort trade. Dairy exports are a key to our future success already, and we export more than one day a week of U.S. milk production abroad. We need to advance a strong trade agenda and will help the dairy business expand. In terms of the dairy pride, dairy farmers work hard to meet the dairy standards required by U.S. FDA with the products of butter, milk, yogurt, and ice cream. Dairy imitators should not be able to ignore current law and use these terms. The FDA must enforce existing regulations. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. Mark Lipson will be up next, and then behind that, Marler Livingood, I think, if I see, or Leningood. I may have butchered that, so I'm sorry, from the California Strawberry Commission. But next, Mark.
Thank you, Paul. Good morning. Representatives, thanks for being here in California. My name is Mark Lipson. I've been an organic farmer over on the coast due west of here since 1983, proudly certified by California Certified Organic Farmers. I'm also the former chair of the California Organic Products Advisory Commission, and I served in the Undersecretary Vilsack as the USDA Organic Policy Advisor. My honor to serve there with Secretary Ross. I want to start out as just saying, on behalf of organic farmers, solidarity with all farmers is a very important part of how we try to interact with the policy world and with all the various sectors in agriculture. I served on the Santa Cruz County Farm Bureau Board for a number of years when I was a younger farmer. Today I'm representing the Organic Farming Research Foundation. I'm the senior policy specialist there, which is a national organization dedicated to the improvement and widespread adoption of organic agriculture through education and research primarily. We fund research. We are a grant maker. For over 25 years, OFRF has been working with Congress and USDA to build the capacity for organic research and extension nationally. We played a major role in the creation of USDA's flagship organic research program, the Organic Research and Extension Initiative, which has been part of the Farm Bill with mandatory funding since 2002. From Chico to Lubbock, OREI has built an outstanding research capacity and track record of performance for organic research all over the country for all different kinds of organic production and processing. The importance of preserving that capacity can't be overstated. My time is already up. I'll just say I support what Mr. Coelho said about enforcement of organic. There are a number of other needs for improvement of the enforcement and oversight of the organic trade. We're very happy to work with the committee on that.
Thank you, Mark. Next up, we'll have Marla Livingood, and after that, Ken Heck. Ken Heck.
Good morning. I'm Marla Livingood with the California Strawberry Commission.
Really close.
Really close. Okay.
Yeah.
The Commission represents California's farmers, processors, and shippers of strawberries. Growing on less than one-half of 1% of California's farmland, our farmers grow nearly 90% of the nation's strawberries. They generate an estimated 70,000 farm jobs, and they contribute $3 billion to rural communities. I want to take a minute to highlight a couple of programs which support strawberry production that are in the Farm Bill. The Market Access Program is a program that provides federal matching funds to promote and expand exports. In 2016, California strawberries gained access to the China market. MAP funding has been crucial in exporting U.S. strawberries to China, a market which has the potential to grow to 30 million in the next few years. Another program which benefits strawberries is the Specialty Crop Research Initiative. For example, the California Strawberry Commission recently supported a UC Santa Cruz request to develop effective biofumigation treatments to reduce soil-borne disease. In addition, we've supported a request to identify disease-resistant strawberry genes. In addition to this research, a priority for the Commission is labor-saving automation, and we believe that the Farm Bill represents an opportunity to dedicate some funding within SCRI to automation. Lastly, the school nutrition program has purchased nearly 50 million pounds of strawberries from California growers. This program is important to both to farmer customers and important in promoting healthy eating and nutrition for children. And we ask that you continue these programs in the next Farm Bill, and we thank you for your time.
Thank you, Marla. Next, we'll have Ken Hecht, and after that, Lily Kirby.
Good morning. Ken. I'm Ken Hecht, Director of Policy at the University of California's Nutrition Policy Institute. We're a part of this Division of Agriculture and Natural Resources. I have an offer, an observation, and a recommendation. First, the offer. The Nutrition Policy Institute contains about 30 researchers, all focused on food and nutrition, with a particular focus on the federal food programs, and within that, on SNAP and on the SNAP education program. If we can be of any assistance to the committee, we'd like to be so. The observation. SNAP Ed is minuscule. It is less than 1% of the SNAP program, but we'd like you to think of it as value added. The purpose of SNAP Ed is to help people make healthy decisions on purchases of food and enable them to prepare and consume healthy food. Given the cost to the nation, as well as the cost to individuals, of obesity and food insecurity, it seems to us a very good investment to help people get the most that they can out of their SNAP benefits. The recommendation. Our research has shown that next to cost, accessibility is the biggest barrier for people's wanting to get healthy food, particularly for seniors, particularly for disabled, and for people who live in a neighborhood without any supermarket where transportation may not be available. That is a serious barrier to getting healthy food. USDA is conducting a pilot program, which you may be aware of, in 7 sites using online purchasing and payment for food for SNAP participants. And we'd urge you to keep an eye on that and consider making that a permanent part of the SNAP program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken. Next, then we'll have Lily Kirby, and coming up after that, Jeff Stump. Lily.
Hi, my name is Lily Kirby. I'm from Davis, California, and I'm a volunteer with the Humane Society. Animal welfare is especially important to me, so I hope that you will work to strengthen animal welfare measures when drafting the new Farm Bill. Also, the Dog and Cat Meat Trade Prohibition Act, or H.R. 1406, was referred to the Agricultural Committee and amends the Animal Welfare Act to prohibit the domestic slaughter, trade, and import-export of dogs and cats for human consumption. It establishes penalties for individuals involved in the dog or cat meat trade and prevents the dog and cat meat trade from taking hold in the U.S., while strengthening our country's standing to press for reform worldwide. Representative Denham is a co-sponsor of this legislation, and I appreciate your support, Congressman. Thank you.
Thank you, Lily. Next, we'll hear from Jeff Stump, and after that, Alicia Rockwell. Jeff.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Jeff Stump. I'm the Director of Conservation for the Marin Agricultural Land Trust.
Malt, also known as MALT. MALT is formed in 1980 as the first organization of its kind. It's a partnership between farmers and conservationists that work to protect agricultural land in our county. As of today, MALT protects 80 family farms and ranches on more than 48,000 acres in our county, but the need is still great due to development pressure and escalating land values. Our success is not measured just in acres and in farms, but in permanence and stability that is brought to our agricultural lands, due in large part to the commitment to long-term monitoring and enforcement and support of place-based conservation practices. MALT has partnered with NRCS to protect 8 family farms in the county, more than 5,500 acres of land, and has helped us leverage significant local, state, and private funding for these programs. Protecting land is only the first step. MALT works closely with our resource conservation districts and our NRCS conservationists to assist landowners with projects through the EQIP program. These projects deliver significant public benefit while helping our producers be more resilient to drought and changed market conditions. I hope you'll continue to support that vital program, also ensuring that NRCS has the staff to make the program work. As our time is limited today, I'm going to give you 3 specific recommendations that would improve the agricultural conservation easement program in our country, in our county, and across America. First, please, we're asking you to authorize funding for the agricultural conservation easement program at a minimum of $500 million per year. As you probably know, the base funding for this current fiscal year will be half of that and is likely to result in less than 7% of the applications from families to protect their farms being funded. A critical level of base funding is necessary to meet the demands of our family farms as they seek to stay in agriculture. Second, we ask that you revise the agricultural land easement program minimum terms to allow more flexibility in the program for partners like MALT, so we can use local tools to meet local conditions. And then lastly, really quickly, please, we ask you that you remove the agricultural land easement plan requirement, which is a burden to landowners and to easement holders, as it requires implementation of practices without funding for them. So thank you for your time, and we'll submit a longer list of comments to the record.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate that. Next, we'll hear from Alicia Rockwell, and after that, Denise Hunt.
Good morning, Chairman and Congressional Committee members. My name's Alicia Rockwell. Blue Diamond Growers is a 107-year-old nonprofit brand cooperative owned by over half of California's almond farmers, averaging around 50 acres. They are small, multi-generational families. International trade is vital to U.S. agriculture. It needs to be a priority in the Farm Bill. Almonds are the number one exported specialty crop in the U.S. and the number one agricultural export in California. The Market Access Program is a critical tool in maintaining export markets. In light of our stalled trade policy, the U.S. is being left behind, and almonds are facing great disadvantage at the worst time, with estimated supply increases in coming years to be over $2.6 billion. An increased investment in MAP could help offset lost trade momentum by keeping new innovative products in foreign markets, driving consumer awareness and consumption. Currently, Blue Diamond is in over 90 countries around the world. It is requested that MAP funding be increased to $400 million. This is essential to keeping our export markets. Our competitors are spending much more than this right now. The EU spends more on wine promotion than the entire MAP program, as an example. The MAP increase benefits all commodities exported. The increase would be $40 million per year for 10 years. The Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance also supports this increase. The Foreign Ag Service Office of Trade Promotions publishes an annual success story report. In the 2016 report under Horticultural Products, Nuts and Other, U.S. tree nut exports reached $7.6 billion and almonds represent over half of all U.S. nut exports at $4.3 billion. As the only branded cooperative in this category, the success of our products into foreign markets can be directly measured by increased consumption and sales, providing a great benefit to the entire almond industry. With the support of the MAP program, BDG's efforts are an essential strategy to serve the U.S. almond farmers who have made these investments at home. Additionally, the Technical Assistance for Specialty Crops program needs to be maintained at the $9 million level. While not within committee's jurisdiction, it is critical that this committee encourage the House to adopt legislation that provides for a legal ag workforce. Without a legal workforce, U.S. ag will continue to shrink and in some cases disappear. Our cows need to be milked every day, all year long, and perishable crops need to be harvested when they're ripe and not later. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Alicia. And again, any additional comments we can always put on, we'll have that website at the end where you can send that. So next will be Denise Hunt. And after that, John Unruh. Denise?
Good morning. Thank you for being here. I've lived in Stanislaus County since 1973, and I'm proud to be a Valley resident in one of the richest agricultural regions of our country and the world. I've been privileged to serve for several years as a Children and Families Commissioner in Stanislaus County. In California, these county commissions are responsible for administering funds from tobacco taxes, for services to very young children ages 0 to 5 and their families. I've come to know about the effects of food insecurity. Many families in this county and region have periods every year when they can't afford to put enough food on the table. There are real consequences to this, especially for our children. Food insecure kids have increased rates of developmental and mental health problems. They have problems with cognitive development, and they have slowed or stunted growth. These problems, in turn, have impacts on behavioral, social, and educational development, leading to growing costs down the line. In Stanislaus County, 21.8%, or 31,320 of our kids, are estimated to be living below the poverty level. In San Joaquin County, 19.8%, or 38,766 of our kids, are living below the poverty level. That's 70,000 children. That's almost the total population of Turlock, the city that I live in. It gets worse the further south you go, with Fresno County alone having more than 68,500 children living in poverty. I don't need to tell all of you from that. I really don't need to tell all of you that, because I know some of you are from counties south of here. So we know that this is what we face in one of the leading agricultural regions in our county and the world. As you move toward developing and finalizing a 2018 Farm Bill, I'm asking you today not to decrease SNAP or food stamp funding, not to decrease school nutrition and summer food service programs, and especially not to even consider moving to block grant funding for nutrition programs. We all know block grant funding leads to significant program service reductions going forward. Please take the opportunity your positions afford you to keep our children from going hungry. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Denise. We'll now hear from John Unruh, and after that, Ryan Cousins. John.
Good morning. As dean, I am here today on behalf of the College of Agriculture, California State University, Chico. Chico State is a comprehensive Hispanic-serving institution university located in the North State with an enrollment of over 17,000 students. Over the past 5 years, our college has experienced over 40% growth, with over 920 undergraduates expected this fall. Our focus is on student success and preparing students for careers in agriculture and also applied research that will advance California agriculture. Our 800-acre farm and agricultural facilities are key to providing students with experiential learning opportunities and conducting applied research. As the House Committee of Agriculture begins to draft a new farm bill, I ask that you please look to reauthorize and reinvest in the following programs important to America's 60 non-land-grant colleges of agriculture, the California State University's 4 campuses with colleges of agriculture, and the California State University's Agriculture Research Institute. They include non-land-grant colleges of agriculture, McIntyre-Stennis Capacity Grant, Hispanic Serving Institutions Educational Grants, Hispanic Serving Agriculture Colleges and Universities, Specialty Crop Research Initiative, Specialty Crop Block Grant Program, and Agriculture College Infrastructure Improvement Program. In the interest of time, I'd like to just spend a few words with the Agriculture College Infrastructure Improvement Program. We seek authorization for a new agriculture infrastructure improvement program to support construction and deferred maintenance of agriculture college research facilities, farms, and classrooms. Facilities are in bad need of attention, both for construction of new capital projects and for tackling the backlog of deferred maintenance of existing facilities. Deferred maintenance alone, in a detailed commission, is estimated to be $8.4 billion in 2015. With this, this strategy does align with federal efforts to invest in America's infrastructure and a means of strengthening our economic growth. Thank you.
Thank you, John.